This is Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
What a day it's been. A report looking into the first phase of LRT in Ottawa. An inquiry that took a very long time, interviewing so many people to come up with these findings and these recommendations. And yes, it went over the troubled history of this line, the door faults, the critical junctures, the public sentiment, the fury over the lack of consecutive days of testing. None of that is new. We're just recapping what we all lived through, right? It doesn't really feel like we're picking up a history book so much as we're doing a bit of a throwback show. Oh, I remember that day. Oh, I remember the argument about that. Oh, yeah, I remember the way that that guy was standing at the LRT station. Remember the guy
just
whose
all
expression
confused.
Went viral? His mouth was open. He had one eyebrow up, jumping into his hairline. And he looked so betrayed and so confused, befuddled by what he was witnessing. A crush of people on the platform, the train not working. But this is a brand new line. He was all of us, that man. He was all of us. The spirit of that man is kind of how I felt today when I was looking at the recommendations, particularly the one where they said we need an independent monitor to come and report directly to City Council. That was my face internally in my mind's eye. Huh? And it's not because I disagree with it, Chris. I think looking at the way things went, it's clear we need somebody on the outside to set us straight, to make sure that nobody is gatekeeping information, to make sure that it's not trickling out in any sort of manipulated way, that the truth is the truth and the full, honest information, all of it, not edited, is being shared with City Council. I agree with that. But where I turn into that man... We should actually tweet that video out. I think Chris Holsky did earlier today. People may remember that man. Where I become that man, and I'm thinking, really? Is that it upsets me to think we don't have the faith in our city staff, that we can't have the faith in our city staff. We got to bring somebody else from the outside because we're worried they're not going to deliver the information that we need to hear. That we don't actually believe that they're capable of doing that or that they might not do that.
So do we need a chaperone? Is that what you're saying?
Somebody, a babysitter, chaperone,
you know?
A lie detector. I don't know what you want to call that person.
A money manager. You know, just I don't know. Just...
What we cannot trust. It says to me this. It says to me we cannot trust our own city staff to provide accurate updates. We have to bring someone else in. And clearly right now we need it. But when did we lose the ability of city staff to advocate for what is objectively needed? When did we lose that transparency? How did this happen? And everybody's got their own opinion, but that's one of the recommendations. There's 103 to establish an independent monitor to keep Transit Commission informed. And we'll get to more of that later. But it's been quite the week. We had the city manager, Steve Kanellakos, abruptly resigning from his position. He's worked for the city for decades. He's held that position since 2016. On Monday, when he went and he said, I'm resigning right now, immediately, today. We all knew it was going to be bad. But this report names names. And his name was one of them. Steve Kanellakos, the city manager, the former mayor, Mayor Jim Watson, John Manconi, the head of OC Transpo. This commission did not beat around the bush. It found fault with all of their actions. And they're not even in their positions anymore. They're not at the city of Ottawa. But it said that there was a problem in the way that they acted. And the people who have been dealing with this LRT saga, including many of you, today are saying, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised, Christy, because we knew we lowered the testing requirements. We knew we reduced the number of minimum vehicles that we were requiring at the time. Except the problem is that council didn't know about the trial run. Council had never been given that information. And the commission found that it was being withheld. The commission found that only some people knew about that. That the former mayor withheld information from the rest of council, that the city manager misled council about the testing and the mayor didn't correct him. And that in all of this, we were so rushed, we were so hurried, we were so obsessed with the way that we were going to look. We got to get this LRT system up and running at all costs. Just make it work, that we were willing to give up on reliability, and that people at the upper levels of our city hall government, that they were willing to not share completely what was going on with everyone else. The rest of council.
At all costs.
At all costs. The mayor had accurate information about what was going on with the trial running, the decision to change the testing criteria. He did not tell the rest of council. The city manager knew that. And he received, I think, the harshest of the criticism. The commissioner said he misled everyone. He misled them. And the conclusion was that this was an egregious violation of public trust in the lack of information. The trial run really is the crux of this. Here's what the brand new mayor, Mark Sutcliffe, had to say about what we heard.
I thought the report seemed to accurately portray, at least from my impression and from everything I've observed, I thought it was a fair and accurate revision of, you know, revisitation of everything that happened during this entire process. I think its findings were appropriate. I think the recommendations are strong.
He says he'll need some staff on the recommendations. That's why he's asking them to produce an action plan on getting these going and putting them in place.
I highlighted a few of the recommendations that I think are important to me, including making sure there is more oversight and expertise, that we have the resources that we need, and that we also have the transparency and oversight required.
When Sutcliffe was asked about Councillor Alan Hubley, because he was part of the WhatsApp group, he was asked, is he going to speak to him? Will any action be taken about his involvement? The new mayor said this.
I'll let the report speak for itself on its findings, and I think those findings were clear. I'm prepared to work with all the members of City Council going forward to deliver a better light rail system for the people of Ottawa.
What about this culture that obviously had a lack of transparency, or it was transparent only if you happened to be in that group, that more tightly knit group? He said he has no intention of taking the same approach.
I think we've already started off with a different approach that is more consultative and collaborative and inclusive. And I'm sure that members of council would agree with that. So we're going to work together. And my intention is to collaborate with City Council and not withhold information from them.
Let's get to you. Question of the day.
Question of the day on News Talk 580 CFRA.
How do you, the taxpayer, feel? How do you, the transit user, feel? How do you, the listener, how do you feel? Jeff, the grumpy Uber driver, says the Three Stooges ran away with their six-figure pensions for the rest of their lives. They didn't have to answer a question. No accountability. So frustrating. I will say this. We did see Steve Canalacos getting grilled by the inquiry. It was rather tense. The mayor did as well. But I hear what you're saying. No follow-up on that because now he doesn't work for the city of Ottawa. Texter here says, I think we have to change on what basis we hire and elect our people. We are the most educated country in the world. How come we can't make a municipal railway work? What else do we have here? We have Chris, the listener, who tells us he was not surprised with these findings either.
Guilty findings, either ethical or corruption, you name it, it's on the list, and there's no accountability except at the ballot box in 4 years.
And he says, to be honest, the fact that there are no legal repercussions, now, just to be clear, there can't be. This is a public inquiry, as Graham was getting at. It's not permitted. These are done to be fact-finding missions, to be a way of trying to figure it out so we don't do it again, lessons learned. That's sort of the sentiment. It's not that there are any charges that can be laid. There are no legal repercussions. Chris says, though, that really isn't surprising to him.
Just another day. Maybe it's a cynical approach, but when it comes to government, and especially the bigger the project, the bigger the problems, I'm glad I don't have to take transit ever. They couldn't pay me to take transit, but I feel so bad for the people that heavily rely on it, that are getting this information confirmed, I guess, for lack of a better word.
They couldn't pay you to take transit. Guess what? I'm the sucker. I pay to take it. I pay to take it, $125 a month. Now, actually, lately it's been just fine. But as we heard in the report today, this was in the report, the LRT still isn't fixed for good. The commissioner said, and I quote, "To date, only temporary measures have been put in place to address the issues arising from the August 2021 derailment. Additional measures have not yet been implemented." AKA, it's still broken. It's still broken. It is not fully fixed. We are still grappling with this. So yes, I'm very concerned about that. And I'm concerned about phase two. As for Rob, who's a city employee, he says the report hits differently. He says he's very disappointed in the findings.
It's disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting. As a city employee, we're in charge of the public trust and we're in charge of the public purse. And every day while we are on duty, it's our requirement to be transparent in every facet of our life and be aware that every decision we make is being decided on by people who pay our salaries.
He said there needs to be accountability here. There needs to be some awareness that there must be change.
And all of this stuff, I mean, it came out with city councilor complaints. Why are you not talking about this stuff? Why are you forcing us to make decisions on information that we don't have? And then with him not allowing for a commission to be even started prior to the government, the province stepping in, now it all makes sense. I mean, he was completely covering up. And for me, it's completely offensive.
Steve says, how about a round of applause for people who voted against an inquiry? I mentioned it earlier. The majority of council decided in a move 13 to 10 that there would not be an inquiry. There was a call for a judicial inquiry to investigate the process that led to the launch of the LRT, any potential misconduct, but it didn't go through in the end. They said, we're not going to hear any new information that we haven't heard before. Well, you know, the thing about this is through this process, it's getting somebody else, getting a judge in here to say, to make a determination that what happened wasn't right. And that's what he said. He said today, this is not the way it should have gone. This information should have been shared. The memos that came out, he had harsh words for RTG and the city, but the defense from Canalacos, Manconi, and the mayor was, well, we couldn't share the test results during the trial period because we made a commitment. They said, no, that's not a real thing. There was not a commitment. And the memo that came out August the 23rd, the commission said that wasn't good enough because it didn't tell council about the repeated failures in early testing. It didn't tell them when things were paused and restarted. And it didn't tell them at the time, what we know now, that the standards were lowered so that the system could get a green light, so that it could get a pass, so that it could get launched and people could get aboard that train. Who else do we have here? Somebody said, it's time to make these officials pay. Every other resident and I in Ottawa, we're paying for this and I can't afford it. I want a refund. I want to recoup my tax dollars. Why don't you start with their pensions? Says this texter. Kevin in Ottawa South says, the only surprising thing about the current situation regarding LRT is that people are surprised we are where we are right now. Of course, the employee of 38 years, he's referring to the city manager, of course, he's going to resign 2 days before the report being released. Since the mayor didn't run again and John Manconi left. If I knew the you-know-what was going to hit the fan and there was a possibility I'd get fired, I'd also resign and retire. I am not feeling good about stage two. I am not feeling good about it.
That was voted on and they had to vote on it. I think they only had 10 days to debate and vote on it, right? Like, they weren't able to look into it even further. Just wild.
If these are the failures right now, and we have 103 recommendations. What does it mean for the future? If we have an independent monitor reporting to city staff, that's a good step. I'm not going to list all of these other recommendations, but the thing is, even if we implement them, we are where we are now, which is we have an expensive system. It still has problems, and we've already plowed ahead with stage two. This texter, John in Kanata, I feel powerless, Christy, my city, and the future for my kids. This isn't okay. We just got, and I can't say it, bleeped. Excuse the language. LRT, Christy, says another, you know phase two is going to be a mess as well. 524 on Ottawa Now. I want to play a couple of clips here from former city councilors and how they felt. Catherine McKenney, who also ran for mayor, called into the show, joined us earlier. They called the report devastating, but they said, I do not find the findings to be surprising.
It is a devastating report in terms of what it does for the erosion of trust at the city, whether it's to be able to handle a contract like light rail, but also whether you can trust the people who are there to ensure that information is shared, that there's no deceit. So I'm concerned today for the city. I'm concerned that people will lose trust in the city.
The commission said the communications that all of council was getting were not good enough, that they did not reflect what was actually going on the ground, that there was a stark contrast, that the communications about the trial running period were inadequate and in some cases misleading. There's one story where Manconi had written this draft memo to council. If he had sent it, council would have known all about the trial running, the need to pause and start, but it was never sent. Manconi said the city manager directed him not to release the memo. So that was a big thing. And the commissioner said Manconi revealed in a moment of candor the real reason that memo was not sent. He testified that if he released it, he feared the council would ask too many questions. That says it all, doesn't it? Former city councilor Catherine McKenney said, not surprising at all.
There's nothing in here that surprises me. I have known all along that we were lied to, and deception was how our former mayor managed council. So it's, it's unfortunate, but it's not surprising.
Then on to former city councilor Diane Deans, who shared her strong opinions on the release of the report. This is what she had to say.
So I'm not surprised by the findings, Christy, but I have to say I am shocked. In all of my years, I have never seen a report so damning of City Hall. Using words like wrongdoing, malfeasance, egregious violation of public trust. I mean, the people responsible for this, they need to be held to account.
And she actually went on to say that her former colleague, Councillor Alan Hubley, who was serving as the Transit Commission chair, who was part of the WhatsApp chat, she said he needs to resign.
Dick Kanalakis, John Manconi, Jim Watson, they need to apologize to the public. In my estimation, Alan Hubley can no longer sit at the council table and make decisions. He has lost the public trust. He has breached it. Wrongdoing, malfeasance, egregious violation of public trust. How can you be a decision maker? He needs to do the right thing today and tender his resignation. And if he doesn't, council needs to ask for it.
I wonder what you think about that. Kadeem says, I agree with everything that Diane Deans has said. As for the outside monitor, we don't need somebody from the outside. We need competent councillors with integrity. The Watson Club blindly followed him and allowed him to do these things. I think the staff who supported Watson in stopping McKenney's inquiry should resign, and Hubley should resign immediately. Another texter. Unless Mayor Sutcliffe, this board is moving so quickly. Unless Mayor Sutcliffe removes Hubley from the Transit Commission, there can be no trust moving forward. Another texter. Watson's transparency was about as transparent as mud. Just because some of these people are no longer city employees doesn't mean they should be exempt from the legal aspect of this. And they also walk away with their pensions and no responsibility for their actions. We have so many here, Chris. We could keep this going all evening. Thank you. We will continue this. Keep them coming. I know, it kind of feels like now that everybody's gone, we're the bag holder. I'm not going to say what's in the bag, but it's not good.
Some high-quality fertilizer.
Ah-ha. Oh, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. I appreciate that. I think I'm going a little cuckoo coconuts here after reading that 600-page report. 529, it's important. I encourage you, even if you can just read the overview, the executive summary, read that. Leaf through it. I swear I...
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
A new report assessing the status of wild species in Canada says that more than 2,200 plants, animals, fish, and other wildlife are at risk of dying out. Welcome back to Ottawa Now. I wanted to replay this conversation from our national show, which was hosted by Deb Hutton today, because I think it's really important. This assessment says another 135 species are already extinct in Canada. It comes from the Canadian Endangered Species Conservation Council. They release this report every 5 years. And the Vice President for Innovation at the World Wildlife Fund Canada, James Snyder, was on News Talk today earlier. The conversation began talking a bit about the report and who's involved in it.
This is a national compilation based on the provinces and the territories coming together with the federal government and scientists really across the country to create an assessment of wild species in Canada. This report, the 2020 report, includes over 50,000 species. That's a large number of species. I think it's more than twice the size of the previous report. It's a major scientific undertaking and really brings together knowledge from across the country to understanding of the status of wildlife, including plants and animals, fungi, really a systematic inventory on the status of those species.
So you just touched at the very end there on what is included, because when I think species, I think animals, but that's obviously not the full picture.
Yeah, so it does include animals, includes mammals, includes amphibians and reptiles, many of those species that come to mind to us right off the bat, but it also includes plants, it includes fungi, it includes insects and other invertebrates. So it is really quite a catalog. The report is, you know, more than 350 pages long. There's a huge amount of information in the report. But to me, what's most striking, you know, sifting through all that information, is that the fact that there are quite a large number of species of wildlife, of plants and animals in Canada now that are considered imperiled, that are considered to be of conservation risk, conservation significance. And I think that number, as you said, more than 2,000 species, that's eye-opening for many, and to me raises this point, which is so important, which is biodiversity loss, the loss of species, in some cases actual extirpation or an extinction of species, is at risk of happening here in Canada. And then we have seen the extirpation of a couple species in Canada in our lifetimes.
Give me an example of those.
Well, the black-footed ferret is an example of a species that has been a focus of conservation effort in our prairie provinces that is considered extirpated or lost from Canada. And so there are efforts underway to actually bring back through captive breeding programs to bring these species back to recover and restore those populations. But one of the key points that I think that has been true in our experience in conservation in Canada and probably around the world is that it's far easier to protect species from extinction than to bring them back from the edge of the brink. And to me, that's such a reminder of the important urgency that we have in the moment when this kind of science comes forward, is that we need to act in response to that, to take meaningful change, to implement new policies and programs that actually address the root cause of the loss of biodiversity here in Canada.
Now, I did read that the bulk of wild species in this country are concentrated in Ontario, BC, and Quebec. Is there a reason for that?
So patterns of biodiversity, of the diversity of species, you know, it's driven by the productivity of those ecosystems. And there's a very strong north-south gradient in Canada in terms of species diversity. We have more species as a whole in the southern part of our country than we do in the north. That doesn't diminish the importance of those species that are found in the north. There's quite remarkable species like caribou, let's say, that, you know, range through many of our northern territories. But from a sheer diversity or number of species perspective, we do see more here in the southern part of the country. Southern Ontario has a very high number of species. And we do see quite a diversity of species in places like BC, where there's a very heterogeneous landscape, you know, a lot of different types of habitat and ecosystems that go alongside that. And so it's in those places where we see a greater diversity or number of species.
I'm chatting with James Snyder, who is the Vice President of Science, Knowledge and Innovation for World Wildlife Canada, as we look at a report that is out cataloging 50,000 wild species and warning that more than 2,000 of them here in Canada face a high risk of being wiped out. One of the other things I read in this report is that 105 of these species that are at risk only exist in Canada.
Yes, to me, it's a question of what we call endemic species. So those species that are found almost entirely and solely in Canada. And so therefore, in Canada, we have the responsibility for their long-term conservation, stewardship, and protection. And there, as you say, more than 100 species identified in this report that are only found here in Canada, and a number of them are at risk. One example of that is the Vancouver Island marmot, a species that's only found in Canada and has been the focus of conservation efforts for a number of years to ensure that that species continues to be here for future generations. And so these endemic species, these, you know, they really are at the core of our conservation efforts, knowing that no other nation, no other country really can take the necessary actions to ensure that these species persist into the future.
And while I appreciate, because we are not talking just animals, obviously, as you outlined, we're talking other types of species, every effort would look a little bit different. Just in a general sense, what is it that we can and should be doing, and why is it so important?
Well, for me, I think there's really three major categories of conservation action that need to be driven forward, you know, for complex ecosystem protection, right? So not only does it include these wildlife populations and these species, many cases mammals, amphibians, and reptiles that we've been chatting about, but also our forests and plant ecosystems, our wetlands and beyond. For those ecosystems to be stewarded for years to come and for future generations, we need to look at three things. One, of course, is large-scale protections. And certainly we've heard a lot from the Government of Canada recently in terms of major commitments that we've made on a global stage towards large-scale protections. We've committed to protect 25% of our lands and waters by 2025 towards 30% protection by 2030. And that's a really ambitious goal, and where Canada, I think, has situated ourselves as a leader on a global stage in terms of advancing protection of these important places, of those ecosystems, of those habitats that are home to the species that we've really discussed in this wild species report. Furthermore, I think as part of that ambition, we need to be ensuring it's done in a rights-based way, one that supports Indigenous peoples' rights and priorities. And that's a big part of our conversation now in Canada, is the role of Indigenous-led conservation.
That was James Snyder, the Vice President of Science, Knowledge and Innovation for World Wildlife Fund Canada on News Talk Today.
You're listening to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Every week you can enter on our website. Go to CFRA.com for your chance to win $100 in Lotto 649 with Encore Lottery tickets with the new Lotto 649. Tonight's gold ball jackpot is $26 million, or the guaranteed $1 million, plus the classic jackpot of $5 million. Today's winner, Helen Tran.
Oh, hold your calls, America. We have a winner.
Congratulations. That goes out to Helen Tran. You could be the next winner. Go to our website and enter CFRA.com. Well, that was quite the show. We're going to leave it there for today. It's a wrap, but it's not a wrap on that story. We'll continue to talk about the LRT report tomorrow and so much more. Have a great night.